Welcome today to Unconventional Growth, the podcast produced by Yield Lab Institute. We're all about accelerating the growth of our food and ag systems by looking into the future with the founders and other innovators that are laying the groundwork for our future food systems to build on. Today's episode is The Future of Food in Space. Nutrition in space is much more important than you might think. Not only do astronauts need the proper nutrients to function, they also need the positive psychological effects food offers, like taste and texture. Our interview today features Anjan Contractor from BHEX and Graham Green from Astrius. These food tech companies are creating more and better food options for both people here on Earth and astronauts in space. Our conversation today will be based on the technologies first developed by NASA to help increase the shelf life of food, and we'll build on that to even dive into how it can be personalized or how the food experience can be tailored even down to the micronutrient level, both for astronauts in space and for those of us here on Earth. So first up, we have Anjan Contractor. Anjan is the CEO and co-founder of BHEX, a food 3D printing company that has roots back with NASA. Anjan and his team at BHEX are focused on developing 3D printing technology for creating more nutrient-rich food. Anjan has a background in additive manufacturing and is the co-inventor of NASA's 3D food printer project used on the ISS. Welcome, Anjan.
Thank you. Great to be here, Dan.
So tell us a little bit about BHEX, how you got started, and what you're doing now.
Yeah. So Dan, as you mentioned, my background is in additive manufacturing, and the previous job before I started BHEX, the company was heavily involved with the Department of Defense and NASA projects. And I was a principal investigator for one of NASA's very exciting projects to develop 3D food printer, or a machine that can automate food personalization for astronauts, especially during deep space missions. Out of that work, I started BHEX in 2015. I quit my job in 2015 because we successfully finished phase one when I was working on that project, and the funding had stalled for phase two because of congressional gridlock back then. In fact, a lot of NASA's projects had substantially been reduced in funding, so my project was one of them. So when I decided to start my company in 2015, I used the core technology that we had developed for NASA, started exploring newer applications of that work. So that's how BHEX was started.
Wonderful. All right. Well, we're going to get back to a lot of those topics here in just a second. Next up, we have Graham Green. Graham is the co-founder and chief product officer with Astrius, a food tech company focused on space nutrition. Graham spent over 7 years working in Michelin star restaurants, both in the United States and abroad. Now, Graham and his team are focused on improving nutrition through developing better technologies that address how we both grow and consume food. Welcome, Graham.
Yeah, it's great to be here today. I appreciate it.
So tell us a little bit about Astrius and how you got from Michelin star restaurants to developing customized nutrition.
Yeah, absolutely. So I spent my career, really since I was a teenager, working in Michelin star restaurants in New York and California, and moved to San Francisco about 5 or 6 years ago now and worked at a couple of different restaurants here. And then fast forward to the beginning of last year, I'd been looking to get into something maybe a bit more scalable and something that I thought was maybe addressing bigger issues than expensive birthday dinners and these types of things. I think spending time in the restaurants that I was in, I noticed a lot of people really dedicated towards finding innovative ways to interact with the food, but it wasn't necessarily being applied to any of the problems in the way that as a society interact with food. And so I ended up getting looped in with who is now my co-founder, Shireen Reza, and she had an idea to essentially build on a history of food products that were originally innovated for the space food programs that ended up sparking enormous commercial success. So a couple of examples of those, not the Tang or space ice cream that I think people normally associate with, but rather energy bars or modern baby formula are a couple of huge, currently successful commercial goods that came out of the first space race. And so our goal as a company is that in answering the more modern questions, not of how you just allow astronauts to survive, but rather what it would look like for these astronauts to eat in long duration space missions. How do you address the flavor and the texture and the different sensory perception that happens in microgravity, like those answers will have a bigger impact on the way that we eat here on Earth.
Interesting. So talk a little bit, Anjan, I'm going to go back to you. When we think about space food, you know, we think of, you know, food in most cases is a commodity that's packaged that everybody gets the same product. Why is personalization important in space?
Yeah, so every time when NASA designs a space mission, especially the one that crosses the higher Earth orbit, the return on investment is justified only if the mission is more than 6 months. So for example, if we talk about going to Mars, that takes anywhere from 2.5 to 5 years. One of the challenges that astronaut would be facing is what sort of food they would be eating or what sort of micronutrients and macronutrients they would be consuming. And the challenge is multiple folds. You know, first of all, when they leave higher Earth orbit, they would be working around 15 to 18 hours a day with very little sleep. They'll be doing a lot of activities. So every day they would be exhausted. They'll have very little time to eat. They'll have very little time to think about what sort of nutrients are important for them. So the idea was to automate food production process with the existing assets that NASA had worked upon for a couple of decades, such as dehydrated food ingredients, and using dehydrated ingredients to recreate texture again with a machine such as 3D food printer. So, you know, essentially the idea was that if they are wearing some sort of devices that can measure their heart rate, their sleep pattern, their hydration level, their bone density, then we can design an algorithm that is attached to the machine that can personalize food. And that can also be part supplement that will give them health benefits. But not only that, it will also give them a vitality to function and do their work properly.
So that's interesting to think about sensors to be able to drive this personalization of food. I want to come back to that in a second. Graham, from your perspective and where you come from in fine dining and with Astrius, why is personalization important?
To be honest, our product is a bit less on personalization and a bit more on incorporating flavors and textures in these environments. I think one thing that Anjan touched on is that these longer space missions are going to be, you know, essentially a mission to Mars could be up to 5 years. And so the short-term ramifications that we've seen of astronauts eating foods that don't engage the senses in the same way that fresh foods would on Earth are going to be exaggerated over time for this kind of a long-term mission, not even to mention the kind of like nutrient degradation that happens with these preserved and freeze-dried foods. And so our goal as a company is to make foods that can engage the senses, knowing full well that they're dampened by when astronauts go up to microgravity. And so, for instance, there's a sensation that described as being similar to having a head cold. And so your nasal passages get clogged. You don't perceive salt the same way. Oftentimes astronauts will go up to the space station and mention that for the first time, they're really craving spice. And so it's an interesting problem to try to solve. Like how do you create foods that will drive an appetite for a person who's working tremendous hours over a long period of time, knowing that the senses that we rely on Earth aren't going to be calibrated quite the same way when people go up to an environment like that.
So that's really interesting. What you're saying here is that these two ideas are complementary to each other, so that we have to provide a quality food experience so that people will get the nutrients, and that might need to be tailored for each individual based on their functional needs as well as their preferences, both because of the environment that they're in, but also just the preferences they come with. And I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about that, you know, so I think a lot of people, you mentioned early on, like the idea of baby formula, you know, a lot of people might think that there's some nutrient that, or some food ingredient that's the perfect food ingredient to solve all the nutritional needs, but it's really situational for any individual. Can you talk a little bit about, from each of your perspectives, what the person needs and expects in a food experience that can be delivered in a new way?
Well, so what I wanted to talk about was from NASA's perspective, since late 1970s, early 1980s, NASA has been investing a lot of time and resources into studying dehydrated ingredients and method of preserving micronutrients within the dehydrated bulk powder form. And there are a couple of methods that they came to elongate shelf life. For example, dehydration process itself is not that fancy. You know, it's basically dehydrating water systematically, depending on how much is the diffusion rate or the water extraction rate that does not damage the micronutrient. We first evaluate that, and then we tune the diffusion rate and take the water out. But after studying that in terms of shelf life, you know, let's say certain ingredient has shelf life of 3 years. The question was, how can we take it to 10 years? And the focus, entire focus, was on having some sort of a polymer encapsulation so it can take, we can take it to 10 years, 15 years, and so on. Well, they were very successful in doing so. But then later on came the human trials in early 2000s, when they noticed that a chewing process is very important for human well-being. A lot of chemicals are being released when we chew food that is related to happiness and our mental function. So when that study came out, NASA was kind of going back to the drawing board and trying to figure out, you know, how can we provide an alternative means of food that has higher shelf life, but as well as they have texture. And that's where 3D food printing came about. But, you know, along with that, the taste and texture, as Graham mentioned, is also very important.
So I want to come back to you to talk a little bit more about this 3D technology, because it's interesting that you're talking about not just taking ingredients that are ready to eat and extruding them, but reconstituting them to restore a lot of the functionality and allow them to have the shelf life that we need for those missions. But Graham, I think this really tees up what you know about the food experience. It's not just about calories and macronutrients. Talk a little bit about what you guys bring to it for thinking about how to create this food experience that works in these really challenging situations.
Yeah, I think there's one kind of like overarching theme that we've noticed in these kind of conversations, which is that the experience of an astronaut oftentimes is an accelerated version of things that people go through on Earth. And so we talk about what happens to a human being when they have to eat just soft foods. And so there's obvious comparisons to people who are maybe in an end-of-life facility or in a retirement community. And it's pretty commonplace to expect that as people begin to enjoy food less, they eat less. And then there's long-term ramifications for that, for people losing weight, having nutrient deficiencies. And so, and admittedly, I'm biased, but I'm more interested, I think, in the flavor as a mechanism to convince people to eat the things that they want. But obviously, there's also a scientific backing that Anjan mentioned, which is that the environment that we've evolved to adapt means that the way that we typically interact with food releases chemicals and endorphins and changes our perception of the food. And so a few things that we've been working on is ways to engage the senses when the human body is in an environment that doesn't seem to register, for instance, salt in the same way. And so obviously there's no magical ingredient that you can add to season the food if you can't taste the salt, but there's other senses that you can engage to make the food engaging from a sensory perspective. So a couple of those examples would be like trigeminal stimulation, which is used to describe the sensation you get if you eat wasabi or if you eat a York peppermint patty and that cooling sensation, or if you go to your favorite Szechuan restaurant and you eat the Szechuan peppercorns. So what I find most fascinating about this conversation is like, there's so many things that we take for granted about the way that our environment has shaped the way that we interact with food. We think, for instance, oh, we can just take the water out of this ingredient and then this will be great. We know exactly how much protein is in here. We know the rate at which it'll degrade. So how much we have to eat extra in 3 years in order to get to the right amount. But then we realize like, oh, actually has a big impact on the mood and your desire to eat food. So I find this whole conversation so interesting.
Well, I think this is a great segue to the idea. You're both founders, so you're both trying to solve a problem. You know, Graham, as you described it, like solving for, you know, what people need to have a food experience in orbit or someplace else in order to maintain the nutrition that they need to go by. You know, you talked about like end of life. We talked in our pre-interview that, you know, disaster situations or for those that are serving in the military, maybe like their food, you know, needs are different. So how do you as a founder, though, address this? You can't just have this vision of we're going to create this great food experience for everybody. You have to start with a product. And Graham, you guys have a product that's out there. I know you're doing pre-orders for it now, but how does a product, what is kind of the iterative nature of solving, in your case, this bigger problem? Where are you starting and what kinds of steps is that going to lead to?
Right. So I would say that the beginning of the process started with realizing that there is a direct path from some of the food solutions that are needed, for instance, for past space food programs that had a direct correlation to what would benefit customers on Earth, which equals like a business that can operate as a commercial business on Earth. Because obviously there's not very many people eating in space on a day-to-day basis, and certainly not enough to justify a company that spends all of its time feeding those people. I would say the first step was to identify that problem. We interviewed a bunch of astronauts and talked about the specific pain points from their perspective on the space food program. And something that we heard early on, it's been remedied since, but we thought it was an interesting point, is that when new waves of astronauts would go up to the space station, they would notice a bunch of vitamin D tablets left over, meaning that people weren't regularly taking their supplements. You know, for us, it was kind of like, well, if you can't expect these high performers to take their supplements, maybe there's a better way using flavor to convince people to make better eating decisions or to incorporate some of these things into their diet. And so that's where we started off with at Astrius, with our first product.
And it's not just a better version of a grape Flintstones chewable, right? I mean, there's got to be something more to it than that.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm glad you brought that up, actually, because Anjan mentioned earlier about there was a time where NASA was looking at these powders as a way to kind of modernize the diet and make it very streamlined. And I remember growing up watching The Jetsons, and I was really interested in food at a young age, but I remember feeling kind of sad watching them go, and that the vision of the future of food being they go to a restaurant, order a prime rib, and there's like this little pill that they eat on a plate, as if like the pinnacle of food will be that we take all the enjoyment out of it. So for me, I'm hoping that the future of food is actually quite in the opposite direction, that it's like more delicious and healthier and better for the environment than before.
So to test this whole thesis that, you know, you want to develop these products, what's your first product?
Yeah, so Astrius, it's named after the first product. And so that's a series of functional chocolate bites. There's different layers of texture. Obviously, like for every reason I mentioned before, texture is a really important component of how we enjoy food, both on Earth and how we hope that this will be enjoyed in space. And also each of the flavors in that line has a different function. And so the first one has 100% of your recommended daily amount of a whole bunch of different micronutrients, as well as minerals. And then the second version is going to be an energy version. So a small bite-sized sphere, but it has the same caffeine as a cup of coffee. There's theanine from tea, which helps to kind of like regulate the caffeine, which is why sometimes people who drink tea notice like a better feeling of energy. And then there's an ingredient as well for cognitive function called acetylcholine. And then we're going to do a rest version as well. And then past that, we have some things that we're working on for kind of like a dissolvable pouch that could hold like water-soluble powders. So that could be used for anything from a soup base to coffee to a whole bunch of different applications there.
Interesting. Okay. So now, Anjan, you have an engineering background, and what you're working on is more of the technology to deliver packaging these foods and reconstituting them. So talk a little bit about your journey from, you know, what you started with and where you're building along to, is it from a product roadmap perspective?
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, my journey was really interesting, even to me sometimes when I look back. When I was working on NASA project, I was so excited about that I was always hoping that I will work on phase one, phase two, then phase three, and then we'll probably one day implement this machine at ISS. We will test it over there. And then when Mars missions are ready, we will take it above higher Earth orbit. And, you know, this machine will be something that I worked on for years, and I'll be very happy, very excited, very fulfilled, having a wonderful career. But, you know, nothing goes in a straight line. When I completed phase one, and by the way, in phase one, I worked my heart out. I put in at least 10 hours a day, 6 days a week, many times 15. And I made a machine that could 3D print pizza based on astronauts' micronutrient requirements and their caloric intake. And we were waiting for phase two, and there was a pretty bad congressional gridlock in 2014. And a lot of NASA's funding was gone. And this project was one of it. So I decided to invest my own capital in 2015, quit my job, invest my own capital, and start working on the project. And it took us almost a year and a half to raise seed funding. You know, until then, I had my own investment, and then friends and family investment. And then after a year and a half, we received an investment from Mr. Jim Grody, who is the founder of Donato's Pizza. And that was a wonderful moment for myself and our co-founders. We got help of Grody family. You know, Grody family is the one running Donato's Pizza. And they identified a sector where we can immediately apply our technology and start generating revenue. And that was in bakery industry. You know, we noticed that a lot of desserts are being decorated by hand. And our machine replaces that skillful labor. That is a dying trade right now. Not a lot of youngsters want to go and decorate cakes, cookies, cupcakes, or anything as such. So we have a wonderful opportunity in that area. We are growing very fast. The second opportunity we saw was, in fact, very interesting. NASA scientists who were involved in our project, they connected us with the U.S. Army. And at that time, military funding was going up. So they started working with us on the same concept of personalizing food for U.S. Army soldiers. We were funded in 2017. We worked 4 years, and now we have a brand called Healable Nutrition, which is selling personalized nutrition bars. You know, consumers can go on that platform. We ask a bunch of questions, and based on their answers, we recommend the micronutrients and macronutrients that these individuals require. And we process with our machinery, we package them and ship them directly to the consumer. So we are on a growth trajectory right now. The vision that we had that food should be personalized. And there are many reasons, you know, probably we will have a question, why do we need personalized nutrition, or what's the point of funding this sort of heavy duty, requiring a lot of funding sort of technology for space food preparation? Or, you know, some of us even question that, why are we even worrying about going to space or going to Mars? So, you know, personalized nutrition, the things which started in space, it's already being available commercially. Via BHEX and BHEX's brand and Asterisk, you know, what Graham and his company is working on, pretty soon it will be available to consumers. So it is super exciting time.
So Graham, let's go back to you. You know, you talked a little bit about right now, your first product is not that personalized. It's based on these functional ingredients. But is this idea of titrating based on different needs or on different expectations at time an important part of what you guys are developing, or are you really looking at it like developing products that uniformly work to solve the problem for everybody with a single product?
I guess there's a couple answers to that question. On one hand, a line of products that do things, for instance, like aid focus, help sleep, give you energy, could be, for lack of a better term, self-prescribed to people who are looking to solve specific problems in a given day. And then the other side of that answer would be that depending on the application, we don't have any immediate plan to do that for commercial products, but we have some ongoing conversations and possibilities to fly the product coming up. And so, for instance, for a space food program, it might be more feasible to do that kind of personalized nutrition, given the volume and everything like that.
Rather than just like the sledgehammer of an energy drink, that you can have it be a little bit more nuanced or have more variety of function than just keep me up all night. So talk a little bit about what are some of the things that you guys see as opportunities. Are you finding ingredients that are well-known? Are you finding novel ingredients to accomplish these things? Are you finding it's about how they're put together and what the experience is of eating them? Talk a little bit about how you create a food product to have functional differentiation like that.
You know, we have right now, we have so much overload of information, but in a good way, in our opinion. For example, you mentioned about ingredients, but they are not just ingredients, but the function of those ingredients are very dependent on, from person to person. So for example, if someone takes in a wheat, the reaction of that individual in their body is very different based on their genetics and epigenetics. And the GVAS program, Genome-Wide Area Network, that program started in early 1990s to collect all the genome available in the US, but then eventually across the world. And its outcome, every gene and RSID's outcome for cancer, for celiac disease, for absorption of nutrients and so on. Now we have so much data that we can start utilizing some of the data to introduce different micronutrients in food. So for example, you know, it is well known that certain type of RSIDs can absorb vitamin C better than others, or some type of gene and RSIDs are repelling the gluten more than the others. And this sort of information is something that we are using in our algorithms, in our software, to recommend different types of foods. Not only that, you know, recently we have started investigating that epigenetics. Epigenetics is the environmental outcome of gene. So for example, if somebody is living into polluted air environment, or they are having polluted water, or certain type of food is predominant in their diet, having certain type of bacteria and fungus, their gut biome and their viral presence in their body changes quite a bit. And that affects what's how they digest micro and macronutrients. So there are companies, they have tried to identify what are the gut biome, what are the microbiome in their gut, and based on that, recommending foods. So all in all, what we see is that personalized food is data-driven. And if we have developed, and some other companies, they have also developed machineries which can directly communicate with this data stream and fabricate food. So the conventional idea that the same type of food is what is available for everyone. You know, it's millions of years ago, we have had this concept of, you know, same food for everyone. In a family of four, even though they have different physiological structure, is having same type of food. The mass production of food for everyone is also something that needs to change radically. We are all very different. Our genetic structure, our gut biome is extremely different from each other. And therefore, we need unique nutrition. And therefore, personalized nutrition is having great future. And I think that will be the way we'll be consuming food.
Great. I want to pause just for a minute. This podcast is sponsored by the Donald Danforth Plant Science Center, committed to growing the 39 North Innovation District, 39NorthSTL.com. This podcast is sponsored by the Donald Danforth Plant Science Center, host of Ag Tech Next, agtechnext.org. Graham, I want to get back to you. So you've got these chocolate bites, so I'm sure chocolate bites that are formulated to have these functional needs met by a Michelin-trained chef are going to be great. Tell me what's really great about the product line you're doing and the path that puts you on.
There's a handful of things that really separate us from things you would commercially find on the shelf, not to mention our overarching space goal. So I think if you were to go to the store, typically you would find a series of products made with similar ingredients. Those products would fall into a couple of categories. So on one hand, you'd be able to find products that are utility-driven and offer little to no taste or texture, certainly in the supplement aisle or in terms of a protein shake, those kind of products. Or you would find things on the other end of the spectrum, which are great in terms of flavor, but when you look at the ingredients list, it's things like corn products, it's palm oil, which has a bunch of difficult issues in terms of your personal health. And so what we're really looking to do is kind of bridge that gap between the flavor and function. So oftentimes, I think those two broad categories can leave out the people who are interested in incorporating healthy habits into their lifestyle, but just haven't been convinced because of the flavor. So our product, because we spent all this time to work on engaging your different senses, we developed a product that, you know, we spent time making sure that it has the perfect crunch so you can hear it in your inner ear. There's a creamy chocolate ganache on the inside that has textural contrast. We sourced the best macadamia nuts that you can get in the US. And then on top of that, it has the function that you would expect from one of these utility-driven products. We're also not using things like palm oil. There's no corn-based sugar. So we really think that this type of approach to a product is really what the modern consumer is looking for.
That's fantastic. And these are available now? And I noticed on the website it says pre-orders being taken. Is that something that I can get for the holiday season for a loved one, or are we just slightly too early?
We did an initial run, got tremendous feedback, but weren't able to keep up with the production. So we're going to do another run and plan to have it available for the holiday season.
That's awesome. And so that's at astrius.co.
Yep.
Wonderful. So Anjan, your products, I mean, you make process-oriented things and you're doing some, obviously, projects for government agencies and other large contractors, but are your products available to the average consumer?
We have our bakery equipment product line that we have been selling across the globe. Our machines are right now, located in Canada, about 10 different states in the US and Mexico. Probably in the next few years, we'll expand to United Kingdom, Thailand, and Brazil. And also, you know, we'll deploy more and more machines in the US. We are working with a very large retailer. I cannot name who. They will be implementing our cake decorating machinery in almost all the stores where consumers can go and personalize the cake decoration. So we are on a growth trajectory on that industry. Our nutrition bar equipment, which can personalize nutrition bar based on individuals' physiological health, is something that we have already developed. And we have introduced a prototype brand called Healable Nutrition. You should check it out, healablenutrition.com. What we do is we ask a bunch of questions to a consumer about their physiological health and goals, their height, weight, gender, obviously their goal, if they have any allergies, and if they would be interested in sharing their genetic data, either from 23andMe or Ancestry.com. If they don't want to do that, we can still personalize their nutrition bars. But if they provide that information, that will give us better insight. So after collecting data, we convert that directly. You know, once they make a payment, we directly convert that into a machine code. And that machine code queues up in our production line. And based on the timestamp, we process or we fabricate these bars. The beauty of this machine is that the first bar is completely different from the second, to completely different from the third to the fourth, and so on, and without losing the production speed. So you can imagine, you know, the Doritos chips, you know, probably, you know, hundreds of thousands per minute. Imagine your personalized Dorito chips with the same speed, very marginal difference in cost.
Well, I'm going to pause you right there because I know that Graham's co-founder has a big data perspective. How does data fit into developing food products? You know, because we think about food products as they've got a formulation that's done one time. How does data about individuals and data about the products themselves fit into a model, Graham?
It's definitely part of the model. So one of the biggest benefits, I think, through an e-commerce platform is that you have the ability to engage directly with the customer in a way that you wouldn't if you were going through a retail setting. And so something that it's not live on the website yet, but that we've been sort of like working on as a way to learn more about the customer's preferences so that when we have a range of products, we can suggest essentially a personalized version. It's not something that's far enough along in the development that you can do it now, but being able to engage directly with the customer through an e-commerce platform, I think really changes the dynamic between a company and what they're able to offer that end consumer versus, you know, giving it to a retailer and having to paint with broad strokes who you think is going into that store and why they're purchasing the products and what demographics they fit into, et cetera.
That's great. Well, we're about to end here because I know you guys are both very busy. Graham, I want to give you a chance to close us with your vision. So you think about it, we've talked about data-driven, we've talked about functional taste in the food experience matching, and we've talked about how space is kind of this interesting petri dish for trying out a lot of these ideas. What do you think is the vision of this over a year, over 10 years? You know, where can this lead us and how can people join for the ride? You know, are you guys looking for customers? Are you looking for commercial partners? You're looking for retailers? You're looking for, you know, what is it that you need? How can people help you and where are you going?
Yeah, I mean, no business has too many customers. So we're certainly, people can follow us on Instagram and I'm happy to give the handles at the end. But I want to bring this back to space. I think Anjan mentioned something important is that oftentimes people think during this whole space conversation is, you know, why are we even going there? Like, what's the reason to spend this amount of resources to pursue something like this? But I think any time humanity has faced a difficult challenge that it's had to overcome, it's really brought together people from different industries to collaborate in ways they haven't before. And it's brought the best of the best to try to tackle the challenge. And so if you ask me where I think this is going, I think the more that we can focus on trying to solve new problems, the more that the individual and consumer can see the benefit of those solutions. So you look at things that Anjan's talking about, you look at how, for instance, you could produce shelf-stable foods that are nutrient-dense, that compete in flavor with those foods that you buy and feel guilty about. I think that those type of solutions are really going to change the way that people eat.
And that's going to be just not just for the people that go into space. That's going to be for the people that never go to space.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we're sitting here today, both of us working on a space related problem, but there's no way to produce, at least in today's day and age, a solvable business that doesn't also have plenty of commercial application. So I think the big takeaway, and sometimes I forget to even bring it up because I sort of take it for granted, is that these solutions aren't worth very much if you can't apply them commercially. And so that's really at the core of what we do, is how do we take what we've learned from, you know, how astronauts maybe aren't taking their vitamins, to how does the changes in sensory perception in terms of flavor and texture and all these things, how does that affect the way they eat? Like how can we apply what we learn from looking at those problems to the average person and how they eat on Earth?
That's true, because the one thing about astronauts is that we have more data about them than we'll have about any consumer at this point.
Yeah, exactly.
Anjan, I'm going to go to you with the same question. We've talked about bringing together this idea of personalized nutrition or functional things, the food experience and flavors and how they vary from situation to situation, shelf life, data, all of these things about creating food products. Where are you going in the next year to five and beyond? And how can people work with BHEX to make this happen?
Yeah, look, I'm going to start with a bigger vision. You know, I'm not sure when that will pan out, maybe next 25 years, 50 years, 75 years, 100 years, I don't know, but it will definitely happen. So imagine this, that human life is 150 years. Its entire life is healthier, happier, and vital. What could you do if that's a situation? I mean, I literally think that if I speak about myself, I could probably finish not only one, two, but a couple of PhDs. I could probably do 10 odd startups. And if I talk about some of the individuals, you know, many of them fancy about becoming a billionaire, but they will probably be fancying about becoming a trillionaire. Okay, if you have 150 years of healthy life. Okay, that is what we are talking about with a personalized nutrition. We are just scratching the surface of personalized nutrition, because first came data, first came understanding of our genetics, understanding of our epigenetics, understanding of our vitals, how they work. Many, many people these days are having smartphones, having wearable sensors, Fitbit and Apple Watch and Nike Watch and Garmin and whatnot. A lot of people are health conscious these days. You know, they know how many calories they need to take, what type of food is ideal for them. We are taking it way further with a personalized food. We want to study your uniqueness, you know, in terms of what genetic structure you have and what is ideal for you. And based on that, we want to recommend not only just nutrition bars, but all foods. You are unique, therefore your food should be unique. That should help you not just fulfilling your dietary needs, but also all the factors in life that matters, you know, your focus, your concentration in education, in studies, in sport, your vitality, your happiness. And I think this is no less than a revolution, in my opinion. How do we granularly define that future that a lot of visionaries, including myself, has predicted? This is by breaking down into a small steps. Amazingly, believe it or not, you know, it started with NASA. NASA had this vision for astronauts that, you know, when they send astronauts who are high asset individual, you know, spending billions of dollars to enable Mars missions or any sort of higher Earth orbit missions, they have to perform optimally. They have to have the best and most optimized mindset. Their mind has to be clear. Their happiness has to be optimal. Their physiological health need to be a top class. NASA had to think how we can achieve these goals. Now, when I started company, my goal is to enable that for the rest of the world, for entire human population. And NASA was a start. BHEX, starting my company, enabling equipment and software technologies, data-driven technology to personalize food is a next step. Graham's company, introducing his product, is also another step. I think there will be a lot more players coming in, and we will see beautiful outcomes in the next 10 years. When we will have 150 years of lifespan, I don't know, probably soon enough.
For links to what we discussed today, go to unconventionalgrowth.org or visit the Yield Lab Institute at yieldlabinstitute.org. Join us in 2 weeks for our next episode and keep growing unconventionally.